What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Plant the Spear Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and welcome to the show. Glad to have you guys join me as we look forward to previewing the NC State Wolfpack, who are currently sitting at number 14. Hoping Florida State can turn things around and kind of have a bounce back week after the loss at Wake Forest. Hopefully that was just, you know, kind of one ugly game that they can put behind them and get things back on track here, get a top 25 win, and kind of get that momentum back on track. And realistically, with NC State, you feel like this is a very winnable game. They are coming off a loss at Clemson, which it is very hard to win at Clemson. So, I mean, there is, you do have to put some stock into that. But they lost the game 30-20, which they did score really late in the game. So, realistically, it was kind of 30-13 late in the game. And the thing about NC State is it's, and we're going to get into this, but it really is the tale of two different teams. It's, or the tale of their level of competition, which we're going to elaborate on here in just one second. But so 8 p.m. Saturday night in Raleigh, it is going to be an away game. It is going to be prime time. It is probably going to be a little bit loud there. Carter Finley holds just north of 50,000. But Florida State's pretty used to playing in loud environments, so that shouldn't be a big deal, hopefully. I actually consider going to this game because I'm probably about half the distance from Raleigh that I am Tallahassee. And that was one of the reasons when I moved up to the Carolinas, I was like, well, you know, we have a significant amount of road games and the ACC championship game is here. And that could be an option for me to see them play. But I just remember all the stories about NC State fans and throwing pee bombs and ganging up on pee bombs and like bottles of pee and throwing them on Florida State fans and ganging up on old folks to like cuss them out and things like that. And you know, I'm just really not trying to have to do an instant reaction from the county detention center there in Wake County. So we're going to avoid this one this time. So we'll just, with that being said, we'll go ahead and we'll get into the game. And realistically, NC State coming into the season, I think they were one of the favorites to win the Atlantic. They had some pretty favorable odds to win the Atlantic. Let's just say that. And I did take that a little bit. But they've underperformed this year compared to what we thought they were going to do preseason. And they've lost some pieces and they've not looked impressive. And truthfully, when you look at NC State, they do have a little bit of a history of kind of being a letdown team. When I did some preseason stuff on them, I found some pretty insane stats actually to think about it. They have one 10-win season in program history ever. In the history of the program, one 10-win season, and their last ACC title was 1979. That's actually pretty hard to believe. And so you can see where they have never really been able to get over the hump and have that really overwhelmingly successful season. I mean, even Wake Forest had an 11-win season last year. So that, you know, it is something to watch. And so just comparing both teams a little bit, Florida State, obviously 4-1 coming into this. They are 3-2 against the spread. NC State is also 4-1, number 14 in the country, and they are currently 2-3 against the spread. Again, one of the big things that I talked about was the strength of schedule. Florida State has currently played the 52nd hardest schedule according to PFF, and NC State is currently 79th, and we're really going to hammer on that in just one second. So far, the lines coming out, NC State is a 3.5-point favorite, which, you know, you're usually, that's about home field advantage, anywhere from 3 to 6 points at times. So realistically, they're saying this is kind of almost a toss-up game. You just get the home field advantage for NC State. PFF has it as a 4.4-point spread. The over-under is 50.5, so they think it's going to be a pretty low-scoring game, which I could see. Their defense is pretty good, and it's going to be a little hard to move, but their offense is not great either. So Florida State's defense could do enough, really, to hold them to a low point total. So far, some other stats, just for the fun of saying them. I don't really think it means much for the game, but the cover probability for PFF for NC State is 50.8%. So even then, they think it's going to be realistically like a three-point game. Win probabilities, PFF gives NC State a 62.1% chance and ESPN a 60.6. So this is going to be a pretty evenly matched game. And just looking across the rosters real quick, just kind of some overall stats. When you look at PFF 70-plus graded players, and 70-plus is, that's a Power 5 quality starter, like we talked about before. And I used a 50-snap minimum because when you don't have a whole lot of snaps, it's easy to run your grade up. So we kind of cut it off as a 50-snap minimum, so you're kind of getting more of your starters here. So PFF 70-plus graded players, NC State has 8 on offense, 9 on defense. FSU has 11 on offense and 9 on defense. Now, granted, that could be a couple of depth players like your receivers and things that maybe aren't frontline starters, but, you know, that's a pretty even matchup there. And I'll tell you, to be honest, before we get into this, when I saw them struggle against Wake and I saw some things on the offensive line and the kicker's still not doing good, and of course those are concerns that I have for this game as well, but really the more I get into this game, the more I start looking at NC State, the more I was fully prepared, which I was very torn on this game. This is one of those games I really have no clue. Like, if this was in Tallahassee, I would probably for sure take Florida State. But just after what we saw, I was kind of knowing that we're only going to get Verse back, probably not going to get Lovett or Scott back. I was like, well, man, I hate to pick against Florida State, but this might be the week I have to do it. But the more I look into NC State, the more my pick is it's in question. And I still don't know what I'm going to do yet. And we've already started the podcast, so we'll just keep it rolling then. So looking at their total penalties, they average around 7.6 per game, which is 107th in the country. And they are +2 in the turnover margin, which is 39th. So they don't play the cleanest game of football. They have had a turnover in every game so far this season. So there are some opportunities. Last week we saw Wake Forest, like we said, they were good in penalties and they were good in turnovers. And so you had to make sure to play a clean game. Now you are on the road and you want to obviously play a clean game this week, because that's really what killed you last week, was all the penalties. You had a turnover and just drive killing important penalties. So that's something that Florida State needs to improve on this week, but it's not like you're playing kind of a really disciplined team like Wake Forest. So when you look at the last two meetings last year, NC State did win in Tallahassee 28-14, but you didn't have Jordan Travis in that game, and you played him a lot closer, honestly, than people expected. And then in 2020, even when Florida State was terrible, they went on the road and they did lose, but it was 38-22. Because the reason I looked that up even was, I guess I had it in my mind that Raleigh's a really hard place to win, and we don't normally play well there. I mean, I will admit that they don't, but when you look, I just kind of wanted to be like, well, how bad do we really play in Raleigh? And so the series total was 26-15 all time. And unfortunately, it is 1-4 in the last five meetings going towards NC State. But Florida State is 5-6 since the year 2000 in Raleigh. So it's not like they're terrible up there. And again, you also have to understand that a lot of those losses piled up late. So I don't think it's that terrible of a place to play. Now, again, like we said, they haven't played there well, but it's not like you're going at Clemson, who has like a ridiculous win streak at home right now or something like that. So with that being said, let's just kind of get into NC State as a whole. And I want to start by talking about their schedule so far this year, because this is really, it was really eye-opening for me to go through and look at a lot of these, because they have had a very weak schedule so far, and the level of performance they've had versus the two Power 5 teams that they played versus the other teams is pretty stark contrast. And that's what I want to talk about, because, okay, so they're number 14. Okay, they're 4-1. I get it. All that stuff looks good. Their only loss is to Clemson. But who have they beat? And that's, to me, is something that really has to be looked at when you talk about NC State. So first game of the season, we know they played Eastern Carolina. That's where it came down late. Eastern Carolina should have won that game about four different times, but NC State still won by 1 point, 21-20. ECU is currently 3-2 on the season. So NC State in that game put up 344 total yards, 211 passing, 133 rushing. So that was a pretty good showing. And then NC State gave up 383 total yards, 267 passing, and 116 rushing. So Eastern Carolina actually outgained them in that game. And NC State had 8 penalties and 2 turnovers in that game, which is what I'm talking about. They don't play the cleanest football. NC State in that game had 14 pressures, 0 sacks. And that was another thing that you'll see as we go through this, is I had in my mind that like their defense was just going to, you know, Jordan Travis is going to be on the ground most of the day. And realistically, they do get a fair amount of pressures, but they don't have a ton of sacks. And when you look at some of the other teams, which I'll elaborate on in a second, and how the other teams were able to pressure them too, it's really not as impressive as you might think. So just to wrap up ECU, so they get outgained by ECU in that game, a game they kind of lucked out to win, but hey, a win is a win. NC State in that game had 14 pressures, 0 sacks. ECU had 7 pressures and 1 sack in that game. So they didn't get a whole lot of pressure on Leary, but they did get a sack on him. So then you move on to Charleston Southern, who is currently 0-4, and they won that game 55-3. So you beat up on a bad FCS team, and you put up 538 total yards on them, 321 passing, 217 rushing. So you're padding your stats a little bit there. Now, of course, we had that game too against Duquesne, and then you hold them to 150 total yards, 114 passing, 36 rush. So the thing is, like, their defensive numbers look good, and it makes you lead to believe they have a good defense, and they do. But you also have to look at who they've played so far. So you have one bad FCS team, one Group of Five team, and then you have UConn, who has one of the worst offenses in the country. So in that game against Charleston Southern, NC State has 7 penalties, 1 turnover. They did get 23 pressures in that game and 1 sack. So again, you know, they're getting some pressure there. And Charleston Southern only got 9 pressures and no sacks on them. But you don't really expect much from them in that game. So now you move to your first Power 5 opponent in Texas Tech. And they did win that game 27-14, but I think there's a little bit of context to be given to that game. Now, Texas Tech is 3-2 and went on to beat Texas, which kind of, you know, you went, okay, well, maybe that was a better win than you thought. So in that game, NC State only put up 270 total yards, 159 passing, and 111 rushing. And then they allowed 353 yards, 299 passing, 54 rushing. So they got outgained again. Penalties in that game, they had 9 penalties, 1 turnover. Now, the thing about this game, the context that I talk about, is Texas Tech had 4 turnovers in that game. They had 7 penalties in that game. They had a ugly pick 6, and they had a muffed punt that gave NC State the ball in the red zone, which they didn't even score on. They ended up kicking a field goal. And NC State also had a double pass for a touchdown, so they had to get one on a trick play. And that's another thing to watch, is Thayer Thomas, he threw for 2 touchdowns in that game, even though one was called back. So that is something to watch, but they were able to pressure Texas Tech pretty good. They had 22 pressures and 4 sacks in that game. One was on a corner blitz, so it wasn't from their defensive line. And Texas Tech only had 8 pressures and 3 sacks in the game. But here's the thing. So when you look at that, you say, okay, well, they had 22 pressures and 4 sacks against their first Power 5 team. That's doing pretty good. That makes you a little nervous, right? Well, when you go look at Texas Tech, I'm like, well, how good is Texas Tech at protecting their quarterback? Well, so they're 125th in sacks allowed. Murray State, which is a very small FCS program in Kentucky, they had 24 pressures and 2 sacks against Texas Tech. Houston had 38 pressures and 6 sacks against Texas Tech. Texas had 35 pressures and 2 sacks. And Kansas State, my goodness, what a long day for that offensive line and quarterback. 27 pressures and 7 sacks against Kansas State. So again, how impressive is it when you look at the whole picture? If you look at the game, okay, 4 sacks is a lot, but you know, when you got a team like Murray State and Houston and, you know, Kansas State is putting as much or more pressure than NC State, you know, you kind of got, like I said, you have to paint the whole picture here. So that's something to look at. And then they played UConn. They won 41-10. UConn is currently 2-4, and I mean, they're terrible. So in that game, NC State puts up 492 total yards, and they give up 160. So we know that they have a good defense again, but UConn did run for 121 yards and only threw for 39 passing yards, which is almost unbelievable. It's almost like, is that a triple option team? But it's not. In that game, NC State had 4 penalties and a turnover. They got 12 pressures and 3 sacks on UConn. UConn got 8 pressures and 2 sacks on NC State. So if UConn is getting 2 sacks against them, you would think Florida State with Versback can do something there. And just to comment on the 39 passing yards, UConn's passing offense is utterly abysmal. It is terrible. They averaged 98 yards per game. They only had 172 yards versus Central Connecticut State and 24 passing yards versus Michigan. So, like, I mean, it's cool to say you held someone to 39 passing yards, but, like, they're the worst passing offense in college football, pretty much. You know, how much can you really hang your hat on that, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And so then we know last week they did lose to Clemson 30-20. Clemson is currently 5-0. in that game, they put up 279 total yards, 245 passing, 34 rushing yards. So Clemson only, they held them way low rushing to 34 rushing yards. In that game, they allowed 354 yards to Clemson, 209 passing, 145 rush. So when you look at them in five games so far, they've been outgained by the opponent in three games. You know, this team is not unbeatable. In the Clemson game, they had 10 penalties and two turnovers. Again, like I said, they're not the cleanest brand of football. The context in the Clemson game, too, was they had a late score by NC State, like I mentioned earlier. And so it was 30-13 with 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So that game probably wasn't as close as it was, because I'm sure there was a little bit of prevent going on there, you know, to a degree to the end when you knew the game was kind of out of reach. NC State in that game had 14 pressures, zero sacks on Clemson. So they held them to zero sacks. Again, the production drops off when you face a better team. In that game, Clemson got 19 pressures and four sacks on them. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, like, when you look at the Power 5 teams, they have not had nearly as much success. And so, like, when you look at Clemson, they got, in their previous games, Wake Forest had 17 pressures and two sacks. Remember now, NC State had 14 pressures and no sacks. Furman, I don't even know where, I think Furman's in Greenville. I should know that because I live in South Carolina. But Furman had 23 pressures and two sacks. Georgia Tech had 17 pressures and three sacks. So they had, what, the third lowest of all, or the fourth lowest of five games so far? So again, I mean, my main concern is Florida State blocking them. And yes, it was concerning what they had happen against Wake Forest, where they lost up front on both sides of the ball. But again, I mean, just kind of look at some of the numbers. Like maybe they're not as good as they look when they have to play actual competition. And that's something that really kind of swayed my mindset here in this game. Now, they did have 10 tackles for loss against Clemson in that game, and they are a pretty good defense. So make no mistake about it. I'm just saying that they haven't really played anybody a whole lot yet. So in that game, let's look at some rushing defensive numbers that I find interesting. So NC State in that game ran the ball 18 times, and they had stopped runs, which is for 2 yards or less. Eight of those were stopped. That's 44% of their runs went for 2 yards or less. And then Clemson in that game had 38 rushes, and their stopped runs were 20, so 53% of the runs. So they can control the run pretty good, but you can also control their run pretty good too. Some notes I have on them just so far overall as far as the team goes. They have a pretty weak strength of schedule. We already discussed that. And they do have a turnover in every game so far. They've not performed near as well against Power 5 teams, and they've only played two of them. They have not put up over 300 yards of offense or 20 offensive points in either of those Power 5 games, because remember, one of them was a pick six. They have allowed over 350 yards in both of the Power 5 games too. So again, you have not put up over 300 yards or 20 offensive points in either game, but you've allowed over 350 yards in both, and one of them you gave up 30 points, and the other one you gave up 14. So, like I said, when you look at the level of competition when it was stepped up, they were not as impressive. And looking at Devin Leary, who is a good quarterback, and I don't want to make it sound like the guy is trash or anything, but he's limited by some of the pieces around him too, and he hasn't had a great season. But he has not thrown for over 250 yards versus a Power 5 team yet, and he only has one passing touchdown on the season against a Power 5 team. That's the thing. He has 10 touchdowns this season. He only has one against a Power 5 defense. I mean, you got to look at the whole picture, guys. You just have to look at the whole picture. His QBR against Texas Tech was 31.9 and 58.5 against Clemson. So once, you know, it's easy to run the score up. It's easy to run the stats up whenever you're playing Charleston Southern and whenever you're playing UConn, who's probably the worst team in FBS next to UMass. That it's not hard, but once you start playing real teams, I mean, look, they played two Power 5 teams, and one of them was a game where they got four turnovers, they got a muff punt, they had a trick play, and they ended up winning the game by 13 points. The other game where they played Clemson, they didn't catch all those breaks, and they lost by 10. You know, realistically, if you want to count, I mean, I know the points count, but, you know, they were down 30-13 with 3 minutes left, so... Yeah, I mean, it makes me really think about some things, I'll say that, as far as my pick goes. And just looking at their defense, which is their strength on this team, We know that. They are 15th in total defense, allowing 280 yards a game. They're 19th in success rate and 9th in total EPA on defense. So they're, you know, they're pretty good there, which, like I told you, they haven't really played a whole lot of people either yet. And so their passing defense is 27th. Their passing success rate is 19th. And their EPA per pass on defense is 6th. The rush defense is 15th. And the total rush defense, that is, rushing success rate is 33rd in the country. And the EPA rush rank is 58th. So they're pretty balanced on defense. They're good against both. They're a little better against the run. And it's going to be hard for Florida State to run the ball on them. I'm not going to lie. Teams have not had a whole lot of success yet. Now, what I did see out of both teams was the quarterback, because Clemson has a little bit more mobility at quarterback in DJ this year. He's dropped some weight and he's become a better runner. And also, Texas Tech has a mobile quarterback. And both of those guys ran the ball a little bit in that game. And they did find some success running the ball because, you know, you get that extra blocker in there. So it did help. And I'm hoping that Jordan is going to be back at 100%. And hopefully he's going to be able to run the ball a little bit more this week, because I think you're going to need that. Their third down defense is 22nd in the country. You know, it's going to be a challenge. Their red zone defense, they are tied for 126 out of 126 teams. So they are dead last in the country. They have allowed 100% on your scoring drives in the red zone. Now, to be fair, Wake Forest was 131st. They are no longer 131st thanks to being able to hold Florida State. And a lot of that has to do with your kicker, because you can't make field goals, which was another thing that, I mean, it really did, it kind of is looming in the back of my mind when I talk about this game and a prediction for this game. And I do think you might see a different kicker this week. I really do, because Mike Norvell knows, as much as he believes in his guys, he has to put his team in the best position to win. So I think you may see a different kicker this week, but not having that in a game that could be close, it could make a big difference. However, on the flip side, if Florida State has to go for it and ends up getting more touchdowns and field goals, that's never a bad thing, because it's hard to win some. You know, if you're going to be moving the ball on this defense, you may not end up in the red zone a lot. So, I mean, you need to be able to get points. You need to be able to get 7 points, or at least 8 or 6 or whatever they end up doing. I don't know if they're going to kick PATs this week or not. NC State this season has created 85 pressures. They have 8 sacks. They're averaging 1.4 per game, which is 104th in the country. So, like I said, it was kind of weird to think about how, like, they have a good defense. They have a good defensive line. I'm worried about blocking them. And they do get a pretty high pressure rate. But when you look at the sacks, and maybe that's because they played a couple mobile quarterbacks, they don't have a lot of sacks. And so if Jordan can escape that pressure, then I think you will be able to move the pocket a little bit, be able to get out to the outside and be able to extend some plays, because they don't get a whole lot of sacks. Their tackles for loss is around 6 per game, which is 56. So they do create a little havoc on you. I mean, like I said, they are a pretty good defense. Some of the things that I noticed when I watched the Clemson game, just some of the notes, they are good at getting pressure. They do like to play downhill, physical, and they do swarm to the ball. So, I mean, you're going to have to eat your Wheaties before this game, because it's going to be a tough one. They did run a lot of zone versus Clemson, because they do run some exotic blitzes. They do like to bring pressure. They run like that kind of 3-3-5 defense. And so they're going to try to confuse you. They're going to bring from the secondary. They're going to bring linebacker. They're going to bring pressure from everywhere. But you would hope that, you know, as long as you have some good blitz pickup, if you're running a three-man front, you would think that your defensive or your offensive line could have a little success against that, but they also know you have weaknesses at the tackle. So I expect they're probably going to blitz from, you know, they're probably going to bring some pressure from the outside fairly often, because they know you have weakness at both sides on tackle. And, you know, we may see, who knows? I mean, you may see Armella at some point. You may see somebody else, because right now Darius Washington he's not performing good enough for you, and on the other side of the ball, Turnitine has not looked great recently as well. So you do have some issues there, which is something that I'm worried about in this game. Now, when they run that zone over the top of the pressure that they bring, I did notice a lot of times against both Texas Tech and Clemson, which I didn't bother to watch the non-Power 5 games, but when I watched those two games, they lost receivers in that zone. They were able to run crossing routes pretty often to be able to get open, and it did work against that coverage because they played pretty soft zone. So there are some opportunities there. Clemson's tight end also had some success because he was just a big dude, and you know, you have Johnny Wilson, who is 6'7". They do have a player out for the first half of this game, which we'll cover in a little bit. Number 24, he had a targeting in the Clemson game. So, like I said, their defense is good and it is solid, but it is not necessarily the, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how to say it. Like, it's probably going to be one of the defenses, your best defenses you're going to face this season, but I mean, it's not an immovable object. It's not something that you can't score on. It's, they have played well against a lot of bad teams, and they have got good rankings for it. But, of course, there is concern because Florida State did not perform that well against a much worse defense last week. And so we'll just quick highlight some of their best players on defense. Looking up front at the defensive line, some of their starters, you have the defensive end who has a PFF grade. Their best pass rusher is going to be number 45. He has a PFF grade of 78.6. He has 15 pressures and a sack on the season. But again, as the trend with every other stat we've talked about with them goes, six pressures and zero sacks versus Power 5 teams and a very high missed tackle rate. So a lot of his pressures came against those weaker teams. His pass rush grade is 79.2. And a lot of these guys' PFF grades, I think, got padded by playing those worst teams. So then, of course, you know, up in the interior, everybody knows they have Corey Durden, number 48, a transfer from Florida State, who's been a good player for them. He has a PFF grade of 60.7, which is just above average, and only three pressures and zero sacks on the season. And his tackling grades have been downright terrible, to be honest. So, I mean, when I looked at the second highest snap graded player, their backup has better numbers and grades than Corey Durden so far. So they're, you know, I mean, how much are you worried about? I know Corey Durden, you know, when you're playing a nose tackle, you're going to get doubled a lot, so, which is what we're seeing a lot this year with Robert Cooper. But he's not necessarily a dominant force. Now, he's a good player. Like, I really wish he had stayed at Florida State. I wish you could have kept him just as far as the player. I think there, you know, there was probably some locker room issues there, and it may not have been a bad total loss. But, you know, he's a pretty big guy. He's a strong guy, but not been the most productive. And then their opposite defensive end, number 9, has a PFF grade of 76.1, 8 pressures, 0 sacks so far, but he has a very high grade in rush defense, 85.2, and he graded well in both Power 5 games. So he's a pretty solid player for them. So maybe run the other way. And but their defensive end players, that the depth players, should I say, they both had sub-60 PFF grades. So once these guys come off the field, you may have some opportunity there. At linebacker, they have the number 1, Isaiah Moore, PFF grade of 71.5, good in run defense, not so much great in coverage. And their other linebackers, number 32 has a PFF grade of 70.5. Whew, that one was whipping my butt. And then linebacker number 11, PFF grade of 56.3. So they do have a little bit of a weakness there at linebacker. They have one guy who's number 11 who's not exactly as good as the other guys. And so DB, they have a cornerback number 3, PFF grade of 71.4. He had a good grade versus Clemson, so he's going to be, you know, they're going to, I mean, it's a challenge. These guys, it is good defense. I'm not trying to sit here and just kind of poo-poo on their defense all day. I don't want to make it sound like Florida State's about to put up 50 points on them, because I don't think that's the case. I'm just saying, when you start looking at some things, it is interesting. Their cornerback number 24, like we said, he is going to be out for the first half, but he's not been that great. His PFF grade is 59.5, and he's been pretty poorly graded in the tougher games. So who's probably going to replace him is number 25 in the first half. His PFF grade is 63.7, and his only snaps versus a Power 5 team was in the Clemson game when he came in for number 24, and he graded out at a 44.8. So you may have some opportunities there. And realistically, when you look at this defense, there's a couple guys. Like, you have one linebacker who's a little bit of a weakness. You have a cornerback who's a little bit of a weakness there. And their safeties aren't the greatest. So if you can just scheme things up to get the right matchups and you can give yourself enough time to expose those, you have a chance against this defense. And when talking about their safeties, number 10, one of their safeties is a PFF grade. He has a PFF grade of 63.7, and his tackling grades are terrible. He's only graded out at a 54.5 in coverage. And then looking at Cyrus Fagan, who we also know is a Florida State transfer, number 4, his PFF grade is 59.8, and versus ECU, it was 52.5. Texas Tech was 57, and Clemson, it was 52.7. He's got a coverage grade of 46.9, so he's not been that effective against the pass. Now, he's good against the run, but that's the thing. Like, you have a safety that is a little bit of a weakness in the pass game. you know, like we talked about, you have a corner, you have a linebacker, you have someone, there are people on this defense that you can pick on. There are players that if you can get those matchups, you can kind of pick on those. So it's going to be tough sledding for Florida State. I mean, I don't expect them to put, like I said, I don't expect them to put up 40 points and 500 yards. I mean, when you look at Clemson's offense, they put up 559 yards against Wake last week. And, you know, Florida State only put up 395 yards, I believe it was. This week, they held Clemson to around 350 yards. So you have to expect Florida State's probably not going to have a whole lot of success. But, again, they've allowed over 350 yards to both Power 5 teams that they played this season, and yet to put up 300. So if Florida State can get around 350 to 400 yards and you can get into the high 20s, I think you're going to give yourself enough of a chance to win against this defense. And I don't think it's impossible, because I think you have better receivers than Clemson has. I think that, you know, your backs, you have a deeper backfield. Now, what's his name for Clemson? I can't think of his name. I'm blanking on his name right now. Will Shipley. And that guy's really good. And he really was – he is a – the majority of Clemson's success is the word I'm looking for. And so, but you feel good about the guys that you got too. Now, I don't feel as good about our offensive line blocking NC State, but I feel like our playmakers out wide and our the depth at running back is something that is comparable, if not better, than what Clemson has. So I think you're going to need to see Jordan use his legs more this week. I think you're going to need to move the pocket to get away from some of this pressure that's going to be coming. But I think you do have some opportunities. I mean, you still have Johnny Wilson out wide. You still have Michael Pittman. You still have, you know, a plethora of receivers and some really good backs. But you're going to have to strap it up and bring it, because I'm worried about this offensive line. I'm worried about your tackles. And so you can find some success, but it's going to be tough sledding. It's just, again, like I said, when you really start to look at who they've played and how they performed against the different levels of competition, it does make you feel like there are opportunities there. And so then we'll just transition over to the offense real quick, because I don't want to run you guys too long. And I really do try not to bore you to death or make your eyes glaze over with stats, but I do find a lot of it is very interesting. It is eye-opening when you look at some of these stats. And so moving over to offense, they average around 77.2 snaps a game. Florida State averages about 73 for reference. So they're pretty average offense. And this is the thing. You're not going to see any more gimmicks. You don't have a really mobile quarterback like you did against LSU and Louisville. You don't have the slow mesh offense like you did against Wake Forest. You can just play your normal defense against a normal offense, which Florida State has been better against. You don't have any gimmicks to worry about, which is nice. As far as pass-run split, they pass about 58.6% of the time and run about 41.4%. As far as their total offense goes, it's currently 82nd in the country at 384.6 yards a game, which, remember, they haven't put up over 300 on a Power 5 team yet. So you see how their stats have been padded by playing those other teams. Their success rate on offense is 39%, which is 89th in the country, and their total offensive EPA rank, which is expected points added, is 80th. So they're pretty lower third in the country, bottom third in offense. Their passing offense is currently 59th in the country. Their success rate on passing is 38%, which is 96th, and their pass EPA rank is 64th. So, again, not really impressive there. Their rush offense is worse than their pass offense. It is currently 95th in the country. Their success rate on run plays is tied for 73rd at 40%, and their rush EPA rank is 97th. So, the concern for me here is you obviously see an opportunity against their run game, but you also allowed Boston College to double their season average on you. You allowed Wake Forest to put up 171 yards on the ground. The problem is not that their rush offense is good or not. Now, keep in mind, they haven't played a whole lot of teams that are really good at stopping the run besides Clemson, and they did stop them. They held them to only 34 yards, but Florida State has had some inability to get pressure up front without Fabian Lovett, without Jared Verse full time. The good news for you is you should get Jared Verse back, but you're still susceptible up the middle to the run game, which is what we saw against Wake Forest. Now, if they have Verse back, and I think Amari Gaynor's back practicing. Now, I don't know if he's going to be in the game or ready to play. You do have the option then that you could move Dennis Briggs to the inside to give you some help at defensive tackle, and you could even look at maybe bringing in Amari Gaynor as a speed rusher at defensive end just because you don't have any depth there. And so like I said, I mean, there are some opportunities, but having Jared Verse back is going to be huge in this game because one stat I put out on Twitter the other day from the Wake Forest game for defensive linemen only, Jared Verse coming off an injury had 23 snaps for 3 pressures and 1 sack. The rest of your defensive line had 333 combined snaps, 8 pressures, 2 sacks. So you can see just how much influence having him back is going to be, and you're going to need him in this game. So you just need to be able to slow this run game down because it seems like everybody's had their season high on you. And, you know, like we said, you're just missing some pieces that are really important. But if you can control them on the ground and make Leary pass you, I feel pretty good because, you know, he has not been great again this year. He has not been great because he's been limited by some of his weapons. He really only has one or two really, you know, pretty decent receivers. And then he's just not had the greatest season. But we're going to get into it, into the offense a little bit more now. So on their third down offense is 40th in the country. Red zone offense, they score on 83.3% of trips. They're 67th, so pretty good. Their offensive line has not been the greatest so far this season. They've struggled pretty well, and they struggled against Clemson too. And so far this season, they've allowed 9 sacks, and they've allowed 4.6 tackles for loss a game, which is 39th in the country. And so you can pressure him. Like I said, you're going to need Jared Verse in this game because there are opportunities to pressure and get sacks on Leary and just kind of disrupt them. And we'll get into talking about Devin Leary now. So he's 6'1", 215 pounds. He is a little bit shorter, which I did notice in some games he had to kind of roll out. There were some things he couldn't see, and he had a good bit of – he's had a few batted passes because he has a hard time getting it up over the defense at 6'1". So, you know, if you can coach your defenders to get their hands in the air, you could have some passes get batted down here. He is very experienced. He has almost 1,800 snaps of experience. On the season, he has a 62.8% completion percentage for 1,135 yards, 10 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Now, keep in mind, like we said, only one of those passing touchdowns has come against a Power 5 team. He has a 72.6% adjusted completion percentage, 3.8% big-time throw rate, which is not very high, 3.6% turnover-worthy play rate, which isn't off the charts, but it is higher than, you know, most. I think most usually come in around 2.8 to 3-ish percent there. So he's been pressured 38 times, like we said, with 9 sacks. And they do drop some passes. He has almost a 10% drop rate from his receiver. He's not a big-time running guy. He has 11 rushes on the season, 36 yards, 3 touchdowns, and he has fumbled it twice. He only has one rush of 10-plus yards. As far as some grading goes, his PFF grade is 68.9, PFF pass grade is 65.6, and his QBR is currently 52.4, which is 77th in the country. Now, when you talk about pressuring him, he has been kept clean a lot, so he has not been pressured very much, and I think a lot of that goes against the competition, or goes to the competition that they've played, because when you look at his kept clean percentage, it is 79.5%, which is unreal. That is, I mean, 80% of the time, he has no pressure to face, no pressure to deal with. Now, when he's not pressured, when he's kept clean, he has a completion percentage of 69.2% with 9 touchdowns, 2 picks, and a PFF grade of 74.4. He's only pressured 20.5% of the time. But in that 20% of the time, he has a completion percentage of 31%, 1 touchdown, 1 pick, and a PFF grade of 39.2. So, unfortunately, you don't have Lovett up the middle to help. But if you have Jared Verse in there creating some problems for this team, creating some problems in the backfield, if you can maybe send a little bit of, you know, a little heat his way and pressure him, I mean, the drop-off is astronomical. And it's not something that he's used to dealing with. Now, again, he is able to escape pressure pretty decent because he is, you know, he's a mobile guy. He just doesn't run it a whole lot. So, and that's the other thing. He has not been blitzed a lot. He's only been blitzed 18.9% of his dropbacks, and he's been not blitzed 81.1% of the time. So they don't bring a lot of pressure against him. And to be fair, his blitz and non-blitz numbers are pretty comparable. So when you look at his depth, this is one thing that also stood out to me. This offense is so very short, dink and dunk, very drop-offs, quick reads, screens. Because when you look at their passing depth, 23.3% of their passes come behind the line of scrimmage. Their short passes, which is 0 to 9 yards, is 37.2% of their offense. So you're talking about over 50% of their offense comes at less than 9 yards, which is, it's crazy. I mean, they get the ball, you know, it seems like that they don't really have those guys who can create separation, who are big play receivers on the outside. So they have to do a lot of underneath stuff to kind of get the ball to the guys in space and let them do some work. And they throw it to the running back a lot. They do a lot of screens. So that's the thing, is they're going to, it's going to be a lot of short games. So you can keep everything in front of you. You just have to tackle well in space. And so when you look at his short passing, he has a completion percentage of 78.1%, which is good. And he has a PFF grade of 70 there. His mid-range passing, which is only 19.2% of their offense, he has a completion percentage of 51.5 and 11.8% turnover-worthy play rate. So when he throws the ball from 10 to 19 yards, I mean, there's some chances for some interceptions and some knockdown passes there, because he's not very accurate there. And even when you look at his downfield passing, they only run downfield passing, which is 20 yards or more, 15.7% of the time. His completion percentage is 29.6, so it's not the most accurate. However, he does have 4 touchdowns and 0 interceptions on his deep passing, and his PFF grade is down at 59.1. But he has a big-time throw rate of 17.6% on deep passes. So he's good at throwing the deep ball when he can get it to his receivers, but they just don't do it. They don't do it a whole lot. And so I don't really feel like this is a game where you have to worry about getting burnt deep. They're just going to try and get the ball to their guys in space and make you stop them, make you make some tackles in the open field. So the guys to watch at receiver, their number one guy by far is Thayer Thomas, number 5. He lines up in the slot about 97% of the time. He's their most targeted, has their most yards, and the most touchdowns as far as the receiving group goes. He also has the most yak yards, and his PFF grade is 75.4. So he's a good player. Like, he is a good slot receiver. Like I told you, in the Clemson game, he actually threw for 2 touchdowns. In that one game, one of them got called back. But so this is a guy that you're going to have to bottle up, and he's going to be tough. I believe he's their punt returner too. And then you also have number 15, Keon Lassane. He's their one of their other leading receivers. He lines up out wide about 92% of the time. And then you have Devin Carter, number 88. He lines out wide a lot too. He's a little bit bigger of a receiver. And both of those guys have a PFF grade around 60. So not anything special. Like, that's the thing about this NC State offense. They don't really have anything impressive at running back. That's something that stood out to me as well. They don't really have a great running game, and they don't really have a special running back. They lost a couple guys last year, and they don't really have anything special out wide besides Thayer Thomas, or a receiver, should I say. Their leading tight end only has 10 targets and 65 yards. So they have not been that great at so far at moving the ball against Power 5 teams, and you can tell. I mean, it's easy to beat up on a Charleston Southern who's 0-4 right now. It's easy to beat up on a UConn, but once they start playing some better teams, you see a little bit of that getting exposed, just not having real big threats on offense. So just doing a quick run over their offensive line, your left tackle there, number 74, has a PFF grade of 55.2. And so there's some opportunities there. But, you know, here's the other thing. So, like, when you look at his pass block grade, it was like, okay, and I look for this as in, like, who can we put Jared Verse on that he can just go to work and go eat on all day? Well, he has a pass block grade of 81.6. I'm like, well, okay, maybe he's not that good at run block. Well, he's not. It's 47.7, but is his grade. But, okay, so what about against Power 5 teams? Well, against Texas Tech, his pass block grade was 52, his PFF grade was 52, and versus Clemson, it was 44.5 with a pass block grade of 42.1. So once you had to face a real defensive end, kind of like Jared Verse. And the other thing to remember about the Clemson game, too, was they had a lot of people out. They had at least 2 defensive linemen out and some guys on the back end, some really important guys on that defense. So that's something definitely, you know, they were able to have a lot of success against NC State, even down a few guys. So it just makes you feel, you know, it's not like you're comparing your defense to Clemson's 100% healthy defense, who is one of the better defenses in the country. You know, they were kind of a patchwork defense in that game and still had success. So it makes you feel a little better about what you have. And so the theme, and to keep you from boring you with stats, I will say the theme across the offensive line is they are graded out pretty well across the board. But almost every one of them had a lot worse grades against Texas Tech and Clemson, against the two Power 5 teams, almost every single one of them. So the first guy was just an example. So like I said, to keep from boring you with stats, just know their offensive line isn't great, and they have performed not very good against Power 5 competition either. So they do, like I said, their grades got a boost from playing Charleston Southern and teams like that too. So again, like I said, just they're not going to challenge you a whole lot on offense, but the Florida State defense has to come out to a good start. You can't do like, you know, Adam Fuller seems to wait until halftime to want to play catch up for some reason with a lot of the better offensive teams, and it's something that you just can't do. You know, you cannot give them a big head start because you're not guaranteeing that you can score on that defense. But again, like I said, you do have some chances against this offense because they have not performed well this season. So just like I said, when you look at the level of competition, you look at the Power 5 teams that they've played, you feel better about your chances now, a lot better than I did in the beginning. So when you look at special teams real quick, we'll just talk about that. They're 98th in kick return. They average 17.8 yards per return, no touchdowns. Kick return defense is 39th in the country. They haven't allowed a touchdown yet. They allow about 18 yards of return. Punt return, they do have one on the season, and they average about 15 yards per return. Like I said, that Thayer Thomas guy, he is their returner. So you are going to have to – your punt return defense has been good, but you're going to need it to be exceptional in this game or he might break one on you. Punt return defense, they have not allowed a touchdown. They'll average about 6 yards per return. They're 71st in net punting. They have blocked one kick and one punt so far this season and not had either of those blocked. And sadly enough, they are 5 of 5 for field goals and 17 of 17 for PAT. So there is one disadvantage there. Maybe you can convince their kicker to enter the portal before the game and switch uniforms before you get started, before kickoff. So overall, we'll just kind of do a quick summary and then we'll get into a prediction here. You have a team here who's at home, who is 4-1, who has lost to really the only tough team that they've played, which essentially is similar to kind of Florida State in a way, except I feel like the competition Florida State has been much tougher than what NC State has played. I mean, Louisville and Boston College would both beat the brakes off UConn and Charleston Southern. So I think Eastern Carolina probably, you know, they would probably give either one of those teams a run for their money because Eastern Carolina is a good little team. But, I mean, they're not really anything overly exceptional. So they just haven't really played anybody yet. And so, like I said, I really do think it is a story of looking at it from two perspectives. You have to look at it from the Power 5 teams that they've played and from everybody else. And when you separate the two, they look a lot more beatable when you look at the Power 5 games. I mean, you had Texas Tech, who played a very sloppy game, and you know they didn't win that one, but it wasn't like it was a blowout. It was a 13-point game, and it was in Raleigh. It was a night game there, so you know they had the loud crowd. They had all the advantage and everything, and you had a team that had four turnovers, a muff punt in the red zone, and you know, NC State ran a trick play, and they still got outgained by Texas Tech with everything that was going on. So that's the thing, is, you know, and then you look at Clemson. They were the best team that they played, and they lost by a couple scores. So to me, it just makes you feel a little bit better knowing that a lot of the high ranks they got because of their good stat numbers came against not great competition. Now, like we discussed in the last episode, post Wake Forest, was Florida State hasn't played a ton of teams either that are real tough, but you've seen yourself against some competition, a top 25 team. You've seen yourself against LSU, who was another quality opponent. And like I said, the things I don't like is that your offensive line struggled against Wake Forest. Now, it wasn't necessarily your interior, but it's your tackles, and that could be a problem in this game. I don't like going on the road and playing at night, which you've already been in that atmosphere before. Well, let me rephrase that. You've already been on the road at night. I don't think Louisville was going to be quite the atmosphere that NC State will be. I think because they feel like they can beat NC State or Florida State, I feel like their crowd feels like they can beat Florida State. And so they're probably going to show up for this one. This is only their second big home game of the season after Texas Tech. So I do expect a good crowd for them. But it just makes you feel a little better. I mean, like I said, I worry about the kicking issues. I worry about blocking them. I worry about being on the road at night. But I was surprised, like I said, when I did the research, when I started digging into the numbers, it honestly surprised me. I thought NC State was just I was going to pick them to win. I really was. I was going to pick NC State to win, and I really do feel like this game is still a toss-up, and I do feel like Florida State could come out and lose this game if they don't come out ready to play. If they play like they did against Wake Forest, they'll lose this one. There is no doubt about that. But if you come out ready to play, if you bury what happened last week and you don't have 11 penalties, you know, and you don't wait till the second half to wake up and start playing hard-nosed football and stuff like that, then I feel like Florida State can go up there and get a top 25 win in a side game, and they can bring that back home to Tallahassee. And so at first I said that I was going to pick NC State in this game, but I think I'm going to change it. And I really almost can't even predict this one because I just don't feel like it's such a toss-up. It's hard to say. I think you're almost adding a score for novelty reasons. But in this one, I'm going to say, because I don't know that Florida State's going to kick a field goal, maybe I'm going to go Florida State 28, NC State 27. How about that? Let's go in an absolute thriller, 28-27. Florida State gets it done, and they get a win against a ranked team, and it also helps you control where you're at in the Atlantic race. Now, of course, you're going to have some things happen with Clemson still winning, but if you can beat them next week, you know, then you never know. You have to keep winning, and I think you can put together, like I said last week, you can still put together a very nice season, and it all starts right now. You just have to rebound. That was the thing I talked about last episode too. I don't want to let one bad game poison the well of what we've seen all season. Now, like we talked about, Wake Forest was probably pretty close to the best team that you've played this season besides LSU. I don't want to let one bad game against a good team poison the well of what we saw the first four games. And so I still want to believe that that team for Florida State is in there. And this, to me, is a more winnable game than any of the three that you had in this ranked stretch between Wake and between Clemson and here. So to me, if you can just get this one, you just get that momentum back and you kind of right the ship. Hopefully they get some things cleaned up, and you know, maybe the hurricane last week just had them distracted, and they've said some things that practice has gone well this week. You know, again, I think we're only going to end up seeing Jared Verse back, but he should be back in full capacity, which will make a big impact on this game. I still don't think you're going to see Lovett, and I still don't think you're going to see Robert Scott. But especially if you see Robert Scott, now that's going to be a big help too. I don't think that's going to be the case, but if it is, you will get a good benefit from that because you've struggled with your play at tackle. So I'm concerned about the offensive line, and I'm concerned about the kicking. But if Florida State can hold their own and just do enough to allow Jordan and the offense to get, say, you know, 28 points, I feel like you feel pretty good about your chances of winning this game. So it's going to be a nail-biter. It's going to be nervous. It's going to be probably another one of those games that you just really you don't know going in what's going to happen, because I could honestly see Florida State winning and losing this game on both fronts. But I just, like I said, just looking at how poorly they performed NC State against Power 5 competition, and knowing that Florida State, to me, is a better team than Texas Tech, and probably, you know, I think Florida State falls somewhere between Texas Tech and Clemson. And so, to me, you had them win over Texas Tech by 13 and lose by 10 to Clemson. To me, that puts you pretty darn close in there. Like I said, 28-27-ish. I could see it going either way. So that's really what puts me over the top with Florida State, is just seeing how they performed against Power 5 competition. And so hopefully they get it done. I really hope so, because I would love to get this thing back rolling and bring some momentum into next week against Clemson, which is certainly going to be a tough test, but you're glad you get them home. So we will see you guys on the other side. I do appreciate you guys listening. I do appreciate your support, and I just thank everyone for tuning in. Hopefully we're going to start doing some more things on YouTube. I'm getting some things set up, some things in line right now to do some live streaming and to do some actual YouTube videos, so you don't always just have to listen. If you do catch this on YouTube, if you don't have to just catch this as a YouTube video with just a blank card over it. So I'm working on getting that set up for you guys soon. But again, just I appreciate everybody. Thanks for listening. Good luck this weekend. Everybody enjoy your weekend. Have fun. And cheer loud for the Noles if you're there. Be careful. Be safe. I wish I could be with you, but you know, I don't have bail money right now. So we'll just leave it at that. But thanks for listening, and go Noles.